With the first pick in the 2003 NBA draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select LeBron James.
With the 13th pick in the 1996 NBA draft, the Charlotte Hornets select Kobe Bryant.
With the first pick in the 2015 NBA draft,
with the third pick in the 2018 NBA draft,
with the first pick in the 1998 NBA draft,
with the first pick in the Orlando Magic,
Michael Olcandy.
With the first pick in the 2019 NBA Draft, the New Orleans Pelicans select Zion Williamson from Duke University.
Welcome to Robin Hoop, an NBA Draft show here on Dash Radio's Nothing Net channel, where we bring rich takes to the poorly informed. All right, this week we are diving in on a new prospect. Of course, this week it is DePaul's Paul Reed, a player that is very, very, very easy to like and to fall in love with as a player. Start watching his games, and I promise you, you're going to like what he brings to the table, and you're definitely going to like his prospects as a prospect when you look at how he's going to project into the NBA. Now, if you look at Paul Reed as a whole, he's known especially for one area of his game, and it's an important one in today's NBA, and that is defense. He is arguably the best defender in this class, so there's lots to like about that. But that's not to say he's a bad offensive player. There's lots of things to like on that end as well. It's just a little different, and he's not an elite offensive player. He is an absolutely elite defender. Now, to go over some things that we've seen recently involving Paul Reed. He did an interview recently, and we'll actually be talking to the person that did interview him. And in that interview, he talked about one area of his game that he is really focused on, and that is trying to be a little more versatile as far as an offensive ball handler or dribbler. And what that hopes to gain in his game is that he wants to be able to play not only the four and probably obviously some five, which is what he projects to be right now, would be mostly four and a little five. But if he can get better as a ball handler, his hope would be at 6'9", being able to play the three as well. Now, we saw flashes of him as a ball handler, especially in transition. He's a guy that likes to grab the ball and then push it up, which in today's NBA, you're definitely not going to complain about that. But if you're going to do it, you have to be one of those players that when he gets the ball, you don't worry that he's just going to, you know, dribble it off his leg or make a silly decision as far as passing. And there have been times where I watch Paul Reed and I kind of go, ooh, I'm not sure about that. There are moments where he does that. And that's why I say he's had flashes as a ball handler. He's had flashes as someone that can push it in transition. But it's not necessarily a skill I would argue is a strength. Not a negative necessarily, especially given he's a taller guy. He's what some would classify as a big man. Those skills are definitely there. And so if he's going to work on that area during this offseason, and if he can bring that to the table at the next level, that's going to make him much more versatile. Now, we talked about how he's a really good defender, and if he's able to change that ball handling a little bit and maybe get a little stronger there, that's just going to add to his arsenal. But already on the defensive end, I think he has the potential to, depending on matchups, guard every single position. So positions 1 through 5. There's going to be some point guards. There's going to be some shooting guards, of course, that it's probably not going to be realistic for him to guard. So not everybody, but he's going to be a player that's going to be very switchable. And in the modern NBA, that is going to be huge. And that's something that I think every team could really use a player of his skill set. And if you look at the defensive end, he shows so many things he's good at. He's pretty good as far as moving laterally. He's able to block shots. He's able to get steals. And in fact, if we look at those two specific things, how about this? So using sportsreference.com, you can do what's called the player season finder, and you can actually search for specific things. If you take his block numbers and his steal numbers, and then also include his rebounding numbers. So when we look at the specifics there, it's 2.6 blocks per game, 1.9 steals per game, and 10.7 rebounds per game. And he is in very limited company. Only two other players since 92-93 have done the same thing. First one being Damian Saunders. He was a junior in 09-10 from Duquesne. And then Marcus Blakely, a sophomore, 07-08 for Vermont. So we're not exactly talking high-level schools here. And granted, you know, sometimes you do this and you type in these statistics and you say, wow, he's in elite company. He's actually in basically a category all of his own. And the crazy thing, too, is he played significantly less minutes per game than those other two players. So he was able to do similar statistics in less time, which is very impressive. But much better free throw shooter in his time out there, and actually less turnovers as well. So if you actually added in some statistics, depending on which ones you chose, he would actually be all alone as far as what he was able to do this past season at the college level. So very cool to see there. One thing that I think needs to be touched on more than it probably has been is that the team that he was on at DePaul was not a very good team. And this has actually been, I would say, something we've seen with a lot of prospects in this draft class, is we are looking at players that have had teams that were not that great, and they've had to shoulder a much heavier burden. You know, in Paul Reed's case, obviously on the defensive end. And then on offense, it was interesting because earlier in the season, they used him more, and I thought that they played to his strengths a little more. Later on in the season, not only did they not do that as much, but as a result, the team didn't play well. And so you look at that record. I mean, they started off the season like 8 or 9 and 0, or I think it might have even been 12 and 1. I mean, they were really, really good to start the season, and then it's like they went off a cliff, and that was really unfortunate to see. Now, some highlights from his season that I would definitely tell people they should take a look at. A few things would be his game against Minnesota, absolutely fantastic, and he's the reason they win that game. They do not win that game without him. 8 blocks. Just so many things to like about him in that matchup. That's one of the games I definitely want to highlight. There were some fun games where he took on Villanova. And for anyone that doesn't follow Villanova basketball, there's some good prospects on that team as well. Last game of the season for his team and for him actually ended up being the game against Xavier. And that's a ton of fun to watch. They were the 10 seed taking on the 7 seed in the tournament. And very, very impressive showing there from Paul Reed. And the one thing we haven't even really touched on yet is he is a really, really good rebounder, especially on the defensive end. You do see him as he's a decent rebounder on the offensive end, but very impressive off that defensive end. One of the better rebounders in college basketball. Almost every single game, I mean, you go into a game when you're playing DePaul and when you're watching DePaul, and Paul Reed is likely going to get a double-double. So there's lots to like there. And again, he's putting up these statistics, and he doesn't have a lot of help. And it got really frustrating for me. Now, when you watch him on the offensive end, he is very, very good in the post. I really, really liked his post game. He was able to show some really nice post moves. At times, pretty good footwork. And his IQ on that end, while it's not always high level, I really trusted him for the most part when he was in the post. So that was one of the areas where I really felt he was really effective. Now, if you actually look at his statistics from three, it's kind of interesting because he actually had a decent percentage from three, 30%. Now, granted, it was on low attempts, you know, just under 2 attempts per game, not a big sample size. And when you watch him shoot jump shots, I do have concerns about that part of his game. And the reason I say that is because his form was not consistent. So even though he did shoot 30% from three, it was a little goofy, and I thought his shot selection at times was not great when he took jump shots, and again, the form was not consistent. Now, when you watch him at the free throw line, though, I definitely feel much better about his shot and his prospects because, you know, 73% as a free throw shooter is not bad, especially for a big man. That's actually pretty solid. You think about, there's a lot of guys that come into this league where you go, oof, I got question marks there. You know, one of my favorite prospects, Denny Avdia, you look at him at the free throw line, and it's at times it's a mess. And so with Paul Reed, I don't feel that way. When he goes to the line, granted, I'm not sitting there saying this is a sure thing. Like when some guys go to the line, you know, when Tyrell Terry goes to the line, for example, you're thinking, all right, this is going in. With Paul Reed, though, I feel fairly confident. And that's a good thing to see, and that's why I do like his prospects at the next level. So that kind of touches on some of those aspects. Let's kind of dive into some of the other statistics, jumping on synergy here. Now, not a ton of things where you go, wow, pretty impressive. A couple that jump off the page to me that are interesting. So if you look at his overall offense, specifically the side out of bounds and then after timeouts. Now, the after timeouts, he's 94%. Excellent. 1.176 points per possession. As far as out of bounds on the side, almost 1.6 points per possession. He's the 99th percentile. Now, that one is only 12 possessions, so it's not a ton. 12 possessions, 19 points, which is pretty good. And then if you look at the after timeouts, that is 51 possessions, and that's 60 points. So very, very impressive in those two specific areas. Now, if you look at the overall half court, his numbers are very similar to transition, both very good. And the numbers, you know, he's in the 70th percentile, you know, 73 and 72 respectively, just depending on how you look at that aspect of his game. So, again, offensively, that's not why you want him. You want him for his defense. Now, if you look at some of the other things that he's in that excellent rating level, and he's in one of the 90th percentiles, if you look at during pass-out situations, so if he's posting up, defense commits, and then that's 19 possessions, 88th percentile, and almost 1.4 points per possession there. So he has shown that he's been able to be successful in pass-out situations, which is good to see. And that goes, again, what we talked about. He's successful in the post. In addition to that, the post-up, and when he gets a hard double, he's also at 91st percentile, just under 1.2 points per possession when you look at that. So, again, that's during trapping situations. And then the first one that he was successful at was post-ups, and that's when the defense commits. Other stats that jump off the page, again, sometimes you have to take this with a grain of salt because there's not a lot of possessions to go off of. But if you look at his, when he's on the left block, this is during the post-up situations, he's in the 100th percentile, almost 1.5 points per possession. Just 13 possessions, but 19 points, and again, the 100th percentile. So obviously that is considered in the excellent category. Now, interesting thing is if you go on the right block, again, low sample size, only 10 possessions, but 12th percentile, very poor, only 0.6 points per possession. So that's really not, at least in the small sample size that we saw, that's not one of those things where you say, all right, that's a strength of his when you look at that. Now, again, the other things we look at as far as his overall post game, when the defense commits, we kind of mentioned that a little bit, but passing out results is excellent. When he passes to a spot up, excellent as well in the 88th and then 95th percentile there. And you're talking about, you know, a number of possessions actually in that regard where you look at him and say, all right, he's shown the ability to pass the ball back out. And there's some things that you can kind of take from what he was able to do from there. Same with when he had hard doubles, very impressive there. And that actually included, especially on the right block, where he was very, very impressive. And that's where he did most of his work. Earlier, we mentioned how on the left block, he was successful as far as offense was concerned and not successful on the right block. So it's interesting how you see these differences when you look at him as an overall prospect and the different areas of his game, whether on the right and left sides on offense, where he was successful or not successful. So it's interesting there. As a pick and roll player, that was definitely not a strength of his when you're going up against man defense specifically. Not great numbers. You know, when you had the when he was a roller to the basket, very low sample size, but that area of his game, he was good. But when he's doing pick and pop, pick and roll against man, some of the times it wasn't great. But when he's rolling to the basket, that's where you saw some success. And when you watched him, and this goes back to what I talked about with not being a big fan of the players he played with at DePaul, there are many instances where he would roll, call for the basket, and say, hey, like, I'm open. Guys would look him off. They weren't using him effectively. Now, their coach talked about how they didn't feel the need to run plays for him. But the problem with that is I didn't think that the teammates used him effectively. Selfish basketball is what I thought of when I watched DePaul. Not great ball movement. Guys were trying to do it on their own. And that's not going to win you basketball games. And here's the thing. Paul Reed wasn't the one that I felt was doing that. Although, were there times where he probably made some bad decisions? Of course. And anyone that's played basketball understands this a little bit. If you're not active in terms of being a part of the play very often, and you're really not getting good looks or getting looks at all from your teammates, sometimes you force things a little bit. And that could happen. But overall, that was not a huge issue with Paul Reed. Very impressed with him as far as what we look at with him is that he's a defensive prospect, but I do think he has some nice offensive upside. Now, we talked about how he was working on his dribble game and his ball handling skills. That's going to be very, very important when he gets to the next level. But on top of that, one thing I do hope he's also working on, and I'm sure that he is being more consistent with that jump shot. Once he gets to an NBA team, too, he's going to have a shooting coach. He's going to have a plan in place to get him more consistent on that end. And so that's why, because he's so incredibly good defensively, I'm just not that worried about his offensive game, because while the floor maybe not isn't going to be as high for him on that offensive end, he's good enough, and when you pair that with his defense, he's going to be able to contribute day one for a team. This is not a, I don't see him as a project player. I see him as someone that can step in day one and make an impact on any team that he goes to. And time will tell what team that ends up being. Now we're going to jump in to interviews. We got a bunch of great interviews this week here. Again, you're listening to Dash Radio's Nothing Minute channel. We are the Robin Hoop NBA Draft Show. All right, welcome back to the Robin Hoop NBA Draft Show here on Dash Radio's Nothing Minute channel. This week, we start the show with a special guest as we are joined by Brian Kalbrowski, NBA writer for Hoops Hype and the managing editor for USA Today Sports Media Group's NBA Wire Sites. Brian, thanks for coming on the show this week.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I'm glad to be here. Looking forward to chatting with you and happy that you were able to have me on.
Now, as you know, this week, our focus is on prospect Paul Reed, who many individual draft experts and scouts have started to move up their boards. But in looking at the Hoops Hype aggregate mock, which looks at a number of different sites, it seems they're mocking him quite a bit lower, and in some cases, not at all. Why do you think some groups are so down on him as a prospect?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if they're down on him as much as, you know, there's a range. I think that he's the kind of player who in this class, could kind of be anywhere from, late first round to potentially undrafted. And that's kind of just the range of this class is, outside the first few picks, I think that, there's a lot of uncertainty. I think this year's class probably has more uncertainty than any class ever. One, it was considered a fairly weak class to begin with. Two, I think that realistically the talent, actually is pretty deep. Beyond the first few picks, maybe it's a little bit unclear who the one pick should be, the two pick should be, but the rest of the players are all kind of bunched together. So Paul Reed is one of those guys who's kind of bunched together. And then three, and this is most importantly, with the pandemic shortening the season, potentially canceling the combine, it's a little bit harder to get a read of these guys. These are people that potentially would rise during combine scrimmages, during workouts. You see his measurements, you see his wingspan. That's the kind of thing that would potentially help his draft stock. That might still happen for him, if there's a virtual combine, which it sounds like there might be. So I think that, we only have what's most recently in front of us, right? And I think in that case for Paul Reed, DePaul had a pretty rough end of the stretch, pretty rough losing season towards the end. And I think that really hurt his draft stock, because I think that, he's somebody that, if DePaul had been playing the way that they were playing to start the season, he could have been potentially a lottery pick, to be honest with you, just based on, the amount of uncertainty that's in this class. I think realistically, there's just a wide range for him because, I think in his situation for his future, there's a wide range of outcomes for him.
So that actually brings up a good point. You mentioned the pre-draft process. And again, we don't know what that's actually going to look like. And I agree that when I look at certain prospects in this draft class, there's a number of guys that could really benefit from getting that pre-draft process. But of course, you're probably likely going to miss out on a lot of the stuff that would help those players, such as combine scrimmages, in-person workouts. Some of that stuff just might not be happening. Now, this brings me to the last December, you wrote about how Paul Reed was one of the most underrated prospects. Do you still feel that way? And if they find a way to have some sort of a pre-draft process, is he one of those players that you think ultimately would benefit?
I think it's hard to say. I think everybody could benefit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that's one of the situations where it really depends on how you show out. And it really depends on his mentality, you know, his desire to win, his competitiveness, how well he's been training. You know, it's hard to say how he's been training. I spoke to him on the phone recently, and he seemed to be, you know, working hard, but everyone says they're working hard. So I think a lot of that shows out on the court. I think that, you know, this will be an off season that really separates the good from the great in terms of work ethic. You know, to be a professional athlete, which all of these players are trying to do, they all have fantastic work ethics. And I imagine Paul Reed's up, but work ethic has got to be elite as well to be one of the better players, you know, on a school like DePaul. But I think that, you know, you'd actually have to see it, you know, see it with your own eyes. And then there's also the nervousness that potentially comes with playing, you know, in front of those scouts and executives at the combine. You know, someone like Kyle Kuzma that really worked for a couple of years ago, and some other guys, you know, failed to show out a little bit. The thing with Paul Reed is, you know, typically in a combine environment, most of the top prospects, you know, the James Wisemans of the world, the LaMelo Balls of the world, they skip out on the actual combine scrimmages. And I think Paul Reed, you know, is not quite in that draft range right now where he'd be able to do that. So I actually think that he'd be one of the better players who would be competing, just because, you know, he is still, you know, not a top 100 guy. He's probably a top 40 guy right now. So I was, I would definitely say that it probably would help him, although I'd have to see for certain because it's really hard to say with much certainty at this point. But, you know, with his defense, you know, his block rate and his steal rate were both considered elite. You know, his defensive intensity, I think, would really go a long way out there. It'd be hard for that to, you know, not show up. I think the one thing that I'd like to see from him is, you know, that shot, that three-point shot. You know, he was just below 30% from the three-point line. You know, I like that he takes them. I think that goes a long way that he's able to be a 6'9" guy who can take shots. So, I mean, if he was out there and, you know, had a good day, went 3 for 5 or, you know, something in that range, you know, something a little bit better than the 30% mark. I think that would really help a lot of things, but you know, the work is already out there for a lot of these players. I mean, he spent, you know, 3 years in college, and I think that, you know, the book is sort of out there of what kind of player he is. He's a hustle guy. He's somebody who can, you know, get a block or a steal and then take it as the ball handler in transition and score a basket. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I had him, you know, as one of the more underrated prospects in the nation back in December. I said that, you know, he really has that Draymond Green, Pascal Siakam trait, specifically meaning the guy who can get a defensive rebound, which he's obviously elite at. Everyone knows that he's, you know, one of the top, you know, top rebounders in college basketball. But, you know, get that defensive rebound, then take it full court and score. I love him as the ball handler in transition. And I think that, you know, that's a role that you can really see him having at the next level that I think would be a really great service for any team. And that's kind of one of the reasons why I thought he was so underrated.
You actually mentioned a couple names when you kind of think of him. For me, when I watch him play, and not the same player by any means, but something about his game reminds me of Willie Cauley-Stein. Mm-hmm. Is there any specific player that jumps off to you? You mentioned like a guy like Draymond Green. Is there someone in the current NBA that you think maybe he's going to be a similar type of role, maybe let's say at the next level?
Yeah, I mean, I actually, you know, when you said Willie Cauley-Stein, I sort of immediately thought of one of his teammates, Dwight Powell. You know, kind of a similar, more of a four. I view Paul Reed more as a four than as a five. But, you know, Paul told me that he thinks he could play the three as well. I think that's pretty fair. I think that, you know, given his skill set, you know, if he kind of develops more as a shooter, you know, he is somebody who can kind of play multiple positions in that sense. So, you know, I think that that's somebody that would probably come to mind for me. I think that realistically, you know, he's somebody that is definitely somebody that could play, you know, real minutes in the NBA if he continues to develop. I think that, you know, there's obviously a lot of work that needs to be done, but, you know, he did shoot 40% from 3-point line, you know, during his sophomore year. So that kind of is something that really is encouraging. You know, I think that, you know, the Andre Robertsons of the world, kind of defensive-minded players like him. You know, Andre Robertson has kind of carved out a nice little career for himself. And then, you know, maybe like a Dwayne Dedman type, you know, even someone like that who is just, you know, a good shot blocker, good steals guy, good rebounder. You know, those are the kind of guys that come to mind. You know, there's a bit of a range on the height there. Robertson 6'7", you know, Dedman's close to 7 feet. So, you know, Paul Reed being 6'9" kind of, you know, falls between those. But, you know, I think that those are the kind of guys. Trevor Booker is another one I think that really kind of reminds me of. Trevor Booker was really good at doing the transition scores after getting the rebound. And I really like that about Trevor Booker.
When you look at, so I've heard him, and I think he touched on this in your interview, but he talks about how he feels like at the next level, he's going to be able to guard 1 through 5. And again, it's probably going to depend on matchups. It's going to depend on the specific players. But do you think that that's how versatile he's going to be able to be and how switchable he's going to be at that next level?
Oh, I don't know about him guarding a one. I just, not that I don't think he could. I just don't really see a scenario where an NBA coach puts him to guard the one. But he has the kind of confidence defensively where he feels he'll be guarding the best player on the opposing team. And I think that that's, you know, a fairly real outcome for him at some point. You know, at his peak, you know, like what he could be is, yeah, he could be the guy that locks down the best player. You know, I think his best case scenario right now to me as well would probably be, you know, the Orlando Magic's Jonathan Isaac. And Jonathan Isaac is, you know, a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. And I think that Paul Reed is kind of somebody who's built fairly similar to him, you know, really long wingspan. Orlando is a team, and he's from Orlando, but Orlando is a team that loves wingspan. And Paul Reed is somebody with a really plus wingspan that I think goes a long way. And that's kind of a team that kind of falls in line for me. And, you know, Orlando is the kind of team that I think would, you know, have him guard a 2 or a 3. And, you know, obviously guarding a 4 or 5 would be fairly natural for him at 6'9". But, you know, I think, you know, if you can guard a 2, you could probably guard a 1, right? So I think at that point, yeah, he could guard 1 through 5. I just don't really see a coach switching him onto a 1 or switching him onto a 2 for the majority of minutes. But, you know, I think a 3, 4, 5, very reasonable.
Yep, that's where I'm at too. I mean, there's obviously going to be some situations where if he's the best defender on the team, they might put him on some of those smaller players. But just consistently, it's probably not going to be something where the coach says, like you said, I'm going to throw him out there on the point guard every night. It doesn't really play to his strengths necessarily. Looking at the interview we talked about a little bit that you just did with Paul, during that, what were your impressions of him that you got from that interview?
He's soft-spoken. He's not one of the more conversational prospects that I've spoken to. That doesn't mean you know, anything really, to be honest with you. I think that it is just a character trait. But I think I learned that, you know, there are kind of guys like Tyreke Evans who just want to hoop, right? And I think, you know, just from talking to scouts around the league, you know, they've kind of warned me not to take too much stock in the guys who are great at conversations, because they're like, you know, obviously, yeah, great talker doesn't necessarily mean he's a great hooper, which I think in my line of business, I can get a little confused about, right? I mean, I get really excited to talk to the Jared Dudleys of the world and the Ed Davises of the world when I'm in locker rooms, but that doesn't make them all stars. You know, it makes them good locker room guys. You know, Paul is not one of those guys. He's really respectful, really humble. You know, somebody who I think definitely hasn't had a lot of media training, though. I mean, you know, and his agent said at the beginning that it was actually his first interview that he'd done, you know, since preparing for the draft with the media. You know, I was a little surprised about that. Just, you know, I think that he's an exciting prospect. I was surprised that I was the first person to ask for him. But, you know, I think that he carried himself really, really fine. You know, I mean, he's definitely someone who's about his business, and somebody who, you know, I think, you know, he's not like a polished interview. I think when you talk to, I spoke to a ton of the seniors in this class, Cassius Winston, Marcus Howard, Skylar Mays, Peyton Pritchard. Those guys have been doing this for a little bit longer at a little bit of a higher level at a, you know, one of the, you know, power conferences. And I guess at DePaul, he wasn't as much that guy. And I definitely learned that. Obviously, the Big East is competitive, but, you know, it wasn't quite one of those things where, you know, he's going to blow teams away during the interview process. But, you know, I spoke to one NBA team that spoke to him, and, you know, they said that he came off pretty well, and that he seems to be a good kid.
Yeah, it seems like what you get with him is someone that's very genuine.
Yeah.
And you mentioned it too. Just because you talk a big game doesn't mean you're going to be some great player. So I do think that makes a difference as well. One thing I saw you tweeted recently, you said even though DePaul slowed down as the season continued, his ability to force a turnover and then create his own offense as the ball handler in transition is something worth studying. And you touched on that earlier, how you really think he's going to be able to be a good transition player. That's a part of his game that you like. And in your interview specifically, he actually touched on working on that ability as far as dribbling and becoming better at that so he can play the three. Do you think that ultimately that's going to be something he can do consistently is play the three, or is it spot minutes? What are your thoughts on him being able to play that small forward position?
I actually think he'd be a better small forward than a four. I think at the four, he's somebody who would be a fine serviceable four, but if he becomes an oversized three, if he gets his shooting numbers closer to where they were as a sophomore, I think that's actually his best possible outcome. Being a tall three who can shoot, that's actually a really exciting player. That's somebody who I think goes from potential spot minutes to real rotation, low end starter, at the beginning of his career type of a player. And then, you see what he does with those minutes and those opportunities. But, something that I should mention is, if you look at his synergy breakdown, which is what a lot of NBA teams do look at, most of his offensive possessions that he finished, the majority of offensive possessions that he finished, were in transition. That was his number one type of offense that he finished in. Obviously, he had a bunch of putbacks. Some possessions as the roll man, pick and roll possessions. Mostly as a pick and pop guy, not really as much of a rim roller. Some post ups, but his number one finish was as the transition in transition. Whether it was as a ball handler on the left wing, on the right wing, middle. His most efficient move was as the ball handler in transition, and that's kind of where I feel. That's where I feel he was the best at. That's where I thought he was the most efficient, and that's also where a lot of his offensive finishes came from.
Now, I have concerns about him as a shooter. Not necessarily inside game. I actually thought he proved himself fairly decently, and he's got pretty good numbers as far as the post is concerned. But just in terms of being like actual jumpers, we talked on the percentage, around 30% from three, small sample size, of course. But for him to be truly effective in modern NBA, especially if we're going to see him at the three, I do think he needs to be able to stretch the floor. When he talked about his offseason work, that was kind of one of the things I was hoping he would touch on. And again, I think everyone in the offseason is working on their shots. That's one of those things where he probably didn't necessarily feel it was special to mention. But what are your thoughts on his ability to be able to consistently hit jump shots?
Yeah, I mean, 49% of his shots were at the rim. And I would say, that's kind of his game. About half of his shots are going to be at the rim. And he shot, 67% at the rim. That's pretty good. But he's not somebody who really is going to create his own offense. I mean, over 80% of his threes were assisted. And about half of his jumpers from two were assisted as well. He can create his own jumper a little bit, from mid-range, which I think is something worth mentioning, is that that wasn't like 100. He can do a little bit off the bounce there. But he's not somebody who's going to make that his bread and butter. I think that, like I said, about half of his shots were within 5 feet of the basket. And, from there, he made about 2/3 of those. And I think that those are fairly encouraging numbers. I think if you can get that closer to 70, you're suddenly, closer to elite. I think that he definitely needs a jumper. This is fairly obvious, but he definitely needs a jumper to have a long career. I think, that's going to be kind of what makes or breaks him. From what I can see here, he only shot like 35% on his jumpers, last season at the fall. I think that that's not great. There weren't too many areas on his shot chart that were particularly attractive. There were a couple of areas from the 3-point line that were better than others, but he actually didn't make a corner three. It looks like, all of last season only took four of them. The corner three is a high percentage shot, especially the catch and shoot in the corner. That's something that really goes a long way, and something that I think is something they will need to develop for sure. Getting that repetition, finding them in the corner off the catch, he needs to be able to hit that And, you know, especially not being a 7-footer, you know, being 6'9", if he wants to play the three, you know, he'll make the catch and shoot in the corner. You know, he's not a huge catch and shoot guy. You know, he's somebody who has done fine off the catch. But, you know, it looks like here it says that he only shot at 33% off the catch, which is, you know, again, not particularly fantastic. You know, off the dribble, he's not exactly elite either. You know, that's not something that he did very often. And he shot, you know, 30% off the dribble. So, you know, his jumper in general was below average. And I think it's fair for him to have concerns about that. You know, for me, one guy who comes to mind for that, though, is Jordan Dell, who, you know, just found his way back into the league. He's got a contract with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Jordan was somebody who, you know, in college was really, really good within 5 feet of the basket. And then when he got to the NBA, started to take a little bit more jumpers, and that wasn't really his game. I think it hurt him. I think that Paul could double down on being a guy that plays well in the paint, but the fact that he was willing to shoot at least somewhat often at least gives him a baseline. You know, I have a cousin. This kind of sounds silly, but you know, he's a high school musician, and I've been telling him, you know, start writing songs now. Don't do covers. Write songs now. So you can get that repetition so that, you know, when his songs that suck, you know, come out when he's in high school so that he can basically have more of a baseline so that when he's in college, when he's out of college, he'll have been writing songs for, you know, 6-7 years instead of, you know, starting to write after whatever. And I think that's something that I kind of feel with Paul is, you know, at least he's doing it now. So at least his jumpers aren't going in now. So there's at least area to improve on, rather than the guys who, you know, take zero jumpers, which, you know, that's a real player too. Like, there are plenty of players who aren't taking jumpers. That's not their game.
Yeah, and I don't think it helped at DePaul. His teammates did not put him into many positions to succeed as far as the offensive end. I didn't think the ball flow was very good in terms of ball movement, passing. There are many times where he's calling for the ball, and if they hit him, he'd have a great shot inside or even sometimes wide open from three, and guys just weren't willing to make that pass. At the next level, you're definitely going to get you know, higher end skill around you. And as far as he's concerned, that's going to make a difference. And the repetition thing is also really key, because when I watch him in games, even his shot form is not consistent. And part of that could be the shot selection. There were a number of times where he would take a 3-point shot, and I'm thinking, you know, you've got a height advantage there, but it's just not a good look. And so when he gets that next level, I think, like you said, repetition is going to be key and finding that consistent look. Let me end with a multi-part question for you. Where do you think he likely goes in the draft? Where do you think he should go? And is there a team or teams that you think would be a good fit? I know you mentioned Orlando as one option.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty high on that fit. You know, that's the team that I really believe would really love him. Obviously, he's from there. You know, I think that realistically, you know, that comfort, that familiarity, their interest in wingspan. That's kind of the dream for me, the dream fit for me for him. They have pick 44 in the draft. I think that's pretty reasonable. You know, I think that I don't see them using, you know, a pick any higher, trading up for him or anything, but I could maybe see them, you know, trading up a little bit, to get him. But if I were to circle something, you know, I don't really see them using pick 15 on him. I think that maybe if DePaul had continued their hot stretch and, you know, they had the combine, he showed out there, you know, all of that, then potentially that could have been it. But I think, you know, honestly, that range, 15 to 44, the two picks that Orlando has are reasonable. And I think that realistically, you know, more likely at the back end, so maybe somewhere in between. But that's kind of the team that I think really makes the most sense for him, to be honest with you. So, yeah.
Perfect. Well, no, I think it makes a lot of sense. And if you're Orlando, especially now with that Jonathan Isaac injury, that's even more of a fit, and definitely more of a need. Before I let you go, where can people find you on social media? Do you have anything else coming out anytime soon?
Yeah, I mean, in my last mock draft, I had him at 45 to Orlando, actually. And I'm going to have another mock draft coming out soon. I recently had my big board come out last week. I've got a 2021er as well. You know, that should come out soon, with presumably Romeo Weems featured in some way. Romeo is probably you know, looking like a first rounder next year at this point, which is something that I don't really see as much. I think a lot of other folks are really high on him, but he didn't have a great freshman year, in my opinion. But yeah, I mean, I'm on Twitter at Brian Kalbrowski, Brian with a Y. I mean, you guys see my name here. It's same thing on Twitter. And then, you know, I'm a writer at Hoopsite where I do a lot of my draft coverage. And then also the editor for the NBA Wire Network at Utah Today, including Rookie Wire, which follows all of the first-year players in the NBA. And we do draft content there as well.
Perfect. Well, thanks again for joining us, and hopefully we can bring you on again down the road.
Yes, thank you for having me.
All right, welcome back to the Robin Hoop NBA Draft Show on Dash Radio's Nothing But Net channel, and we have the pleasure of being joined this week by Carl Berman. Now, Carl, I would love to give you an introduction, but I really look at your vast resume, and I think it's best to have you do the introduction yourself. Just if you could go over a little bit of kind of your history, because obviously you have a very long and credentialed international basketball and just scouting in general in terms of your what you bring to the table.
Yeah, thanks. I think I'll try to do it quickly. I'm a managing partner of a company called Net Scouts Basketball. And we are probably the largest international basketball scouting company. Our big product is a scouting service that we sell to colleges in the U.S. We also do some consulting with mainly European professional teams. We do some work for NBA.com where we write all the international draft profiles. So we have about half of all their profiles up on their site now that were written by us. Write for Basketball Times. I've been the international basketball columnist for over a decade. We take teams overseas to China and South America, where we take a team that represents the U.S. and play other national teams. And do some teaching with a company called Sports Management Worldwide in basketball scouting.
So let me start off with this before we jump into our prospect focus this week, Paul Reed. Given your expertise and how much you know about the international players, is there a player in this draft class from that international side of things that really stands out to you?
I really like two. I like Killian Hayes a lot. He's a tall point guard who's 6'5", strong body, needs to work on his offensive game some. But what I really like about him is he's – you know, a kid playing this year, he played in the top division in Germany and, you know, playing with other professionals who are, you know, 25, 30 years old. And he was kind of the guy, you know, he looked at some of the games. He's a leader. He's telling everybody where to go on the court, to control and huddles. And from a, you know, physical standpoint and just a game management standpoint, I really, really like him. He needs to, you know, improve his shooting. But overall, I like him a lot. I think he could be a, you know, definite top 10 pick, maybe a top 5 pick if someone really likes him. And Denny Abdija from Israel, I like a lot too. He's came on strong towards the end of the year when they were finishing up their season in Israel. Although the Israeli league isn't the best, you know, he plays for Maccabi Tel Aviv, and that team is way above the rest of that league. So the results are a little skewed, but played well towards the end, and shots getting developed a little bit more. Looks a little more comfortable shooting. He's a good point forward type. You know, this year everybody kind of looks at Luka Doncic and sees how successful he is, and you know, NBA guys are looking for someone like him, and he's, you know, like him, but not, you know, not as developed and probably doesn't have the upside, and I don't see him as being a pure point guard in the NBA. But at the same point, I like him. I think he'll be able to carve out a nice NBA career.
Yeah, I mean, those are two of my favorite international players. I'm really, really high on Denny Abdija. We actually talked with the Sports Rabbi on our first episode this season and went in depth on Denny earlier, and I'm a big fan of his, and I like what he brings to the NBA game. Looking specifically now at Paul Reed, when you look at his overall game, what really stands out to you about Paul Reed as a prospect?
Well, defensively, I think he's you know, I've looked at a lot of video in my spare time these days without being able to travel to games or anything. So I honed on him a little early, and I just love his defense. If you look at his block and steal percentages, there's no one pretty much close to him in this draft. I think it was top, let's see, on Ken Palm, he's top 32 in block percentage, and he's 86th in steal percentage. And for, you know, 6'9", 6'10 guy, playing inside, having a steal percentage like that, I mean, he has a higher percentage than any of the guards that are coming out that are looked at as potential first round draft picks. So defensively, he really, really stands out.
Yeah, completely agree. And actually, I started to dive into the numbers more a little bit as far as blocks, steals, and rebounds. And if you actually go, searching for seasons, basically, of players that have put up the kind of numbers he has in terms of steals, blocks, and rebounds, and only two players have even done it since 92, a guy named Damian Saunders and Marcus Blakely. And that's it. I mean, he's putting up numbers that we just haven't seen. And so defensively, so impressive on paper. And when you watch his game, I mean, he impacts so positively on that level. Do you have any concerns about that translating to the NBA level?
Not really on defense. My only concerns with him are from an offensive standpoint. But I think defensively, he could slide right in and help a team defensively from day one. You mentioned his rebounding overall. But defensive rebounding, he's again a top 50 guy in the country, and he's a very strong offensive rebounder. So on the defensive side, he may need to improve a little bit on pick and roll defense. But overall, I mean, he's got great hands, great reaction time. He blocked shots. He had that one game this year where he blocked eight shots. So yeah, from a defensive standpoint, I don't really have many concerns at all.
Yeah, you mentioned that eight block game that was against. I'm from Minnesota, so as a Gopher fan, it wasn't my favorite game. But man, he was so impressed in that game, especially because he's going up against Daniel Arturo, who is a very good center prospect. And so to be able to do that against someone that is dominant in the post is very impressive to see. And defensively, I agree. There's so much to like. When we look at the offensive side of things, that's where my concerns kind of start to jump up. And one of the things that I'm really concerned about would be his jump shot, because when I watch him shoot, the shot selection doesn't necessarily bother me, because the way they used him at DePaul was a little goofy at times in terms of the types of shots he got, actual jumpers. But his inside game, I thought, was good. But what are your thoughts on his jump shot? And do you think he's going to be able to get that to be more consistent? Because even his form, for example, would vary shot to shot.
Yeah, I agree with you. His form is funky. It does change. It seems like he has a little hitch in his shooting motion, you know, at times also. But his success rate really wasn't bad. I mean, on three-pointers, it was a small sample size. I think he's right around a 33% career three-point shooter in college. This past year, he dropped off a little bit. He shot, I think, 29%. And last year, he was much higher. Smallish sample size. So yeah, he needs to improve his shooting for sure. But he runs the court really, really well and finishes exceptionally well inside. He has a really high rate of finishes in the paint. So from that standpoint, someone that he can plug in to play defense, run the court really well, maybe score on putbacks or transition, not shoot very much. That's a valuable piece to add to a team, especially if you can draft him, late-ish in the first round. And he can work on his shooting. And, you know, that's the easiest thing to fix with the NBA shooting coaches. In repetition, you can develop a shot. I don't see why you couldn't.
Yeah, there's a lot of players that come into the league and they have defensive question marks. I think it's a lot more difficult to get a guy to be good on that end than it is, like you said, to just develop a more consistent jump shot and to be a good offensive player. But even if he doesn't necessarily have a jumper right away, I do think he has enough offensive skills, whether it's transition, whether it's his inside game, where he definitely can make an impact on day one. And so that's an area where I think that he can improve. enough where we can be pretty happy about that and his floor. He did an interview recently with Hoops Hype, and he talked about how one of the things he's focused on in the offseason has been his ball handling and his dribbling, because he wants to be able to play the three some at the next level. Do you think that's a realistic outcome?
I think if he works on it, yeah. You know, his handle now seems to be a little bit high, and you know, could get into trouble, you know, at an NBA level in that way. But you know, there are flashes where you see him. I saw him do a behind the back dribble past three guys and scored. So yeah, so I think there is similarity there. When I look at him, at times I can compare him to Siakam, because just from his physical standpoint, 6'9", 6'10", kind of skinny, runs the court exceptionally well. His shot isn't that good. When he, you know, Siakam came out, his shot wasn't very good. So, you know, as a high upside, you know, that, you know, might be appropriate for him is probably a stretch. Otherwise, you know, like a Brandon Clark might be a similar guy to him, where, you know, when he came out, not really a great outside shooter, but really good defensively, rebounding, block shots. But from an offensive standpoint, yeah, I think if he can develop a handle, and then that upside is possible for him.
What do you think he's going to be able to do on defense in terms of positionally guarding? In his most recent interview, he said his goal is to be able to guard 1 through 5. So he wants to be able to have that switchability. Do you think that's realistic?
If he's guarding a small ball 5, you know, with a true center, it might be a little difficult just from a weight standpoint and strength. But otherwise, yeah, I think he's quick enough to guard. You know, I've seen him switch off on guards and be very successful. He has quick feet laterally, great hands. His hands are great as far as deflections and steals. And he's very long. He's got a 7'2 wingspan. So yeah, I think he can switch out onto guards, either guard position. Certainly he can guard 3s and 4s. And then 5s if he's maybe not up against a big true center.
What do you think his main position will be in the NBA? I've seen some people that question his ability to truly play the 5. Some people think the 4 is probably where he's going to go. And then obviously, if he does improve in the shooting and the ball handling areas, if you have a guy of that size playing the 3, I think that would be massive in today's NBA. But ultimately, what do you think is probably his ideal position when he gets in the league?
Yeah, I think right when he gets in the league, probably is a 4. But again, his defensive capabilities are such that, you know, the positional decision really isn't, you know, that important. I think teams are more flexible with playing a guy as, you know, one way on offense and another way on defense. So defensively, I think, you know, he can play pretty much anywhere, starting as a 4 and guarding a power forward, but switching off and guarding other positions other than a true center. On offense, most likely as a 4. You know, if he does develop a handle down the line, maybe he'd be a combo 3-4 type player.
When you look at your most recent mock draft, you have Paul Reed going to the Thunder at pick 20. Would you say that's kind of the area of the draft that you think he likely goes in?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, that's mainly my thoughts based on what I've seen as far as, you know, looking at video and all these guys and seeing a lot in person. You know, all it takes is one team to really like you to, you know, pick you at a high level. So I think he's a steal if he drops down towards the end of the first round. I might even move him up a little bit on my board pretty soon, just because I've been looking at more video and I just really like him.
He's an easy prospect to fall in love with just because he does a lot of the things that a lot of guys don't. There's so many players that come into the league and you have, you know, all these glaring holes as far as defense is concerned. And he's one of those guys that really sets himself apart on that end, which is really cool to see. So let me ask you one more question here before I let you go. Is there a team or teams? I know obviously you have him mocked to the Thunder, but is there a team that you kind of say to yourself, I really like his fit here?
Yes, I think the Thunder would be a really good fit, but you know, based on his capabilities defensively, I think he's pretty, you know, pretty good fit pretty much with anyone, just because of his defensive capabilities. I think, you know, you look at players and you say, well, if you do one thing really well, then you'll be successful no matter where you go, whether that's a shooter like a JJ Redick who can make it from a shooting standpoint, or a really strong rebounder, and Reed just is a really, really excellent defensive player. And from that standpoint, I think, you know, the fitability with a particular team is less important than his strong skill set in that particular area.
Perfect. Well, thanks again for joining us. Before I let you go, where can people find you on social media? And is there any articles or mock draft changes or anything you have coming out soon?
Yeah, we'll probably come out with another mock draft within a week or so. Make a few changes, nothing major. You can find us on netscoutsbasketball.com. On Twitter, I'm @Carl Berman. You can look at our NBA work on NBA.com. If you go to the draft section and look at prospects, you see a lot of our scouting reports. And then another thing we're doing is I do a GM scouting and basketball GM GM and scouting course with Sports Management Worldwide. So we're doing that, and also a scout apprenticeship program is starting up soon. So we're doing that starting in early September.
Perfect. Well, thanks again for taking the time to join us, and hopefully we can have you on again down the road.
Sounds good. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to the Nothing But Net channel on Dash Radio. This is the Robin Hoop NBA Draft Show, and now we are joined by Dan Stack, senior writer for We Are DePaul. Dan, thanks for joining us on the show this week.
No problem.
So I want to start with sort of a unique question. I'm going to give you a stat, and I just kind of want to get your reaction in regards to Paul Reed. So if you go to sportsreference.com, if you look up his, basically looking up the totals per game for blocks, steals, and rebounds, he's one of only three players to put up those statistics. Like I said, as far as block, steals, and rebounds since 92-93. So only two other people have ever been able to do the stat line that he actually put up this past season.
Wow, I did not know that. I mean, it doesn't surprise me a little bit, but I mean, who were the other two players? You know?
So Damian Saunders from Duquesne did it in 09 and 10, and then Marcus Blakely, 07-08 from Vermont.
He'd be the one from the first, from a high power conference, a major conference to do it. So that is very impressive.
Yeah, it's one of those things where people talk about how he's such a good defensive player, or maybe such a good rebounder. And when you really paint the whole entire picture and put it on paper, it just shows you how impressive he is at those stats, because, you know, there's so many guys in the NBA now that put up really good numbers in college, and you don't see any of those players on this list. And I think that really speaks to how unique he is as a prospect.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you this. In April, you released your scouting report on Paul, which I strongly encourage our listeners to check out. And in it, you talk about how he's the perfect example of a player improving year after year. So touch on the improvements and maybe the progressions that you've seen from him during his time at DePaul.
Yeah, he was took a while for him to get going in his freshman year. He's in the non-conference schedule. He played a few games here and there. He had some flashes of brilliance. But otherwise, you know, he didn't get going into the conference season. And then our head coach, Dave Little, started to gain more confidence and started playing him off the bench. And then his sophomore season, he wasn't even starting. And it took an injury to someone in the backcourt. And then they went big, and they put him in the starting lineup. And ever since he put in the starting lineup from his sophomore season, he's been, you know, stellar. And then he won the Big East Most Improved in the sophomore season after almost 9% jump in points, 5% jump in rebounds, and then the blocks are about half and half better, and he just sort of had tremendous growth from that freshman summer season, and he carried it over this year with his best numbers overall, pretty much.
Yeah, when I watch him, even just looking at the senior season, I definitely felt like there were areas where he improved just from start to finish from this one single season, whether it was, I think his decision-making's gotten better on both ends, mm-hmm. especially on the offensive end. And one thing that kind of sticks out to me about when I watched DePaul is Paul really had to shoulder a very large burden when it came to not only defense, but at times on offense as well. What are your thoughts? For me personally, kind of watching more from afar, I didn't think he was surrounded with the strongest team.
No, especially that was a big problem because DePaul, one of the biggest weaknesses this year was three-point shooting was, you know, abysmal compared to the other teams in the conference and the nation overall. I don't know their exact numbers, but they were in the lower third percentile of three-point shooting. And teams collapsed on Paul. And you could see that, you know, some of the times the frustration was on his mind. And the thing is, Coach Lato has always said that he never runs plays for Reed because he's more of like an athletic go-getter, and he's usually in the middle of things by hook or crook. He's not someone, you know, offensively dialed in that you run plays for, but he gets his numbers otherwise just by being, you know, lengthy and tall and the wingspan he has. He just inserts himself into the mix.
Yeah, the only issue I had with that strategy by the coach was I thought there were many times during games where it would have been beneficial for them to go to Reed more, like other players. And I definitely didn't see that enough. There's many times where Reed runs the floor and he'll be open inside the post. And if they just threw it in there, I feel like you'd get an easy bucket. And instead, you know, have one of the guards that's like, nope, I'm gonna do it all myself. And it ended poorly, to say the least. And so that part was a little frustrating to me. But I think that speaks to how impressive Paul was, that he's able to put up the stats and impact the game like he was, despite not having a lot of help. So I think that was pretty important, I think. Probably helped his growth as well, because he had to shoulder a larger responsibility. Would you classify Reed during his time at DePaul, especially this season, I would guess, as a leader?
Not vocally. I mean, he's, I guess more by example with his work ethic. He's not a very vocal guy as far as I can see. But you know, most of his teammates loved him. You gotta look up and admire his growth from year to year and how much work he put into it. So I guess people see that and, you know, take their orders from that. But as far as vocally, no, but just based on his laurels and how he worked himself to get here from, you know, a three-star recruit where he had like three offers coming out of college. And, you know, and they saw, DePaul saw something. And when he was like 6'5", he actually grew like 4 years between his like junior year in high school to like a sophomore year in college.
Yeah. Yeah. The interesting thing that I keep hearing about is the fact that not a lot of people scout or not a lot of people recruited him. And obviously I think that speaks to his work ethic, that he was able to, you know, take one of those offers and become this high level player that he is now. When you look back at his career at DePaul, is there a specific game or like a moment that sticks out to you?
I know a couple of games. His sophomore season when they're, I think their first game, after they lost like three games in a row, he had like a monster performance at St. John's, where they could just, they can't keep him off the boards. He was getting so many offensive rebounds and stretching the floor, and he was just a phenomenal force in that game, and they just had their way inside. That was a game like where I knew this guy could be a pro. I mean, he was just taking over the game. I think that was in January of 2018, something like that.
Yeah, to me, when I watch players, I feel like a lot of guys have those moments where you watch and you go, something special about this guy. And it sounds like that was definitely one of those moments. I will say for me, I'm here in Minnesota, and I'm at heart a Gopher fan. And I'll tell you right now, one moment that sticks out to me is when he absolutely destroyed the Gophers this past season. 8 blocks, just was doing it all. And to me, just very impressive what he's been able to do. And not just that game, but many games when I've been able to watch him. I just felt like he is a guy that impacts the court in such a positive way. Now, when you look at his game overall, is there an area where you maybe think he's a little underrated or maybe he just doesn't get the credit that that he deserves?
Underrated. I guess he needs to work on it, but I'd say ball handling. He could. So he's shown it many times where he's gone coast to coast, and he's got some nifty moves with the when he's got a full head of steam hitting down the court. So, you know, his ability to slash, I guess, even though he's not projected to be a four. I mean, excuse me, a three at the NBA level. He still has the ability to slash, and he's got good footwork getting to the rim. So I would just say the hand of the ball while going to the rim.
And I would say that he actually agrees with you because I read an interview with him recently with Hoops Hype, and he talked about how one of his main focuses this offseason has been his ball handling because his hope is at the next level he can play the three some, which would be pretty impressive. And you're sitting there at 6'9", he's got a great wingspan. If he was able to add that to his game, just being more consistent with that portion of his game, I think that would be huge. What are your thoughts on Reed as a shooter? You know, you look at him for a big man, he was pretty good at the free throw line, but at least from my perspective, I felt like he was a little inconsistent with his jump shot.
Oh, for sure. That's his big Achilles heel in a game predicated, the NBA predicated on spacing the floor and shooting only a lot of your big men. That's something he's got to work on. He's got a very unorthodox release that, you know, he shoots just slightly over his shoulder. I don't like the looks of it. Most of the times, you know, he shot 40.5% in his sophomore season, and it's not like he took like five. He took a good amount, and he had a good showing there. But sandwiched in was his you know, total numbers from his freshman year, and this past year he shot 30.8. I think in due time he's just got to put the work in. Maybe he'll be an acceptable shooter at that spot in the NBA. But it's something that, you know, you're not going to be leaning on late in games for him to hit three pointers. But he's got to work on that, and maybe someone at the next level will fix his shot, and he can expand on that and get better that way.
Yeah, I think one of the big things when you get to the NBA is just being acceptable, because he's so elite defensively. If you're a team, that's what you're drafting him for, is you're drafting for how good he is defensively. And then I will say, I do think he's a very solid player in the post. And so he already has aspects of his game that you're going to lean on. You don't have to lean on his shooting, but you know, if you're wide open in the corner, for example, you'd like to have him have that ability to at least be able to hit that shot. Yeah. Let me end it here with, I want to give you one more multi-part question. If you had to guess, where do you think the area of the draft he likely goes in? Where do you think he should go? And are there any teams that you think could be a good fit?
I'm seeing a lot of the mock drafts at that. After the season ended, there was like, you know, these changed so many times over the months. There were some that had him going in the first round as high as like 16, but I don't see any of them putting him in their list right now. I think they got him anywhere between 30 and 50. So I do see a second round unless he really impresses at the combine. As far as fits, I could see someone like the Portland Trailblazers would be a good fit because they don't have a need for – they have, you know, rugged big men. I don't think they have, like, the athletic big men that can cover fours as well as his with his speed and agility and quickness. So I see them as a good fit.
You know, I thought of one more thing. In your player profile of Reed, you kind of mentioned a kind of being like a poor man's Pascal Siakam, or maybe if he was able to hit his ceiling defensively, a Jonathan Isaac. I think those are really, really interesting comparisons and players that I definitely think he shows definitely flashes of being very similar to.
Yeah, like I said in the article, in Siakam's first 2 years in the NBA, he shot no better than 22% from point-guard range, and now he's one of the top, 15 players in the league probably. He's very like Jonathan Isaac in that the combination of steals and blocks. That's, you know, between those numbers, they average like three and a half a game steals plus blocks. So that's something some NBA scouts will love about him.
So yeah, I think he brings a lot to the table in those aspects. Let me end it with this: where can people find you, and where can people find your work as far as social media, and then on We Are DePaul.
Well, my Twitter is at StackDamon, that's StackDemon. And I exclusively work for WeAreDePaul.com, which is part of the 247 Sports Network. And then I'm just, yeah, those two places. So I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time, and talk again soon. Have a good one.
You too.
All right, welcome back to the Robin Hoop NBA Draft Show on Dash Radio's Nothing But Net channel. We are now joined by Lawrence Kramer, the editor of the DePaulia newspaper's sports section and a current student there. Lawrence, welcome to the show this week, and thanks for taking the time to join us.
Of course, thanks for having me on. I'm really happy you reached out to me.
Let me ask you this. So obviously our focus this week is on Paul Reed from DePaul. And when you think about Paul, what comes to mind about him as a player or a person?
Well, I think the first thing that kind of stands out is, you know, it's his work ethic. You know, you kind of look at how he started out at DePaul. You know, he didn't play a lot. He wasn't a starter. And then kind of gradually throughout his freshman year, then into his sophomore, then his junior year, he really became a focal point in the team. And it's because really of his work ethic, his determination to get better. And it really showed on the court these last 2 years, where his sophomore year, he was named most improved player in the Big East. And then this past season, he was named to this Big East All Second Team. So it's just really kind of, you know, as a person, his work ethic, his determination to get better, and then, you know, as a player, he's very good defensively. He works hard to get rebounds, and it's really hard to guard him on offense because he continues to move without the ball. So he's not a normal focal point in the offense, but he still finds a way to get involved, even though, you know, DePaul didn't run a lot of plays for him in his 3 years there.
And I think that's a good point. And maybe you can touch on this. What were your thoughts on the team as a whole? Because I thought at times they just weren't playing at a high enough level. And sometimes you really, like Paul Reed, really had to step up and shoulder a larger burden than maybe he would have had they been a stronger, you know, overall team.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think, you know, this year, obviously, they got off to a really hot start. They started 12-1, and it was a lot of it was because of Paul Reed. You know, he was averaging a double-double. He was scoring 20 points, and he was really making a presence on the defensive end. He had a big block against Minnesota that sealed the win for them. So, and then when they started to tail off in the Big East season, their offense kind of became stagnant. They didn't really run a lot of plays. And instead of playing through Paul Reed, kind of a guy that Big East teams didn't have a person to put on him, they didn't really give him the ball in the post. They kind of ran all their plays through Charlie Moore. That's why they started to kind of look disorganized on offense. You know, they started taking a lot of losses. And I think maybe if, like you said, if they maybe played through Reed a little bit more, gave him more touches, then maybe they would have had more success because, you know, he averaged 15-10. And I think if he averaged a little bit more shots, he could have been closer to 20. Maybe that would have helped them a little bit more. So I definitely agree that, you know, especially in the offensive end, they did not perform as well as they could have, considering all the talent they had around Paul this season.
You know, you mentioned the Gopher game, and that one hits hard. I'm from Minnesota, and as a Gopher fan, I didn't love that, but as a Paul Reed fan, I did, because such an impressive game. I think he had 8 blocks that game. So
yeah, he did.
That's definitely one of those moments that really stands out as you watch him as a player. Maybe you can touch on this. What are your thoughts on him as a leader for DePaul? On the court, it definitely seemed like he was one of those guys that was communicating, and he's a very intelligent player. Would you say that he was probably one of the leaders that you saw on the team?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, as a junior this year, he's one of the, you know, the upperclassmen on the team. And I think his desire to win, you know, you could really see he wants to win badly. And obviously, if you look at DePaul's recent history, they haven't been very successful on the court. And, you know, with their hot start this season, it was a lot to do with Paul's, you know, play, but also his desire to win and, you know, his leadership, because they had a lot of transfers coming in. They had a lot of freshmen being inserted into the lineup. And I think it really helped a lot of, you know, those new players to kind of get going early on in the season. I think when they kind of start to tail off in the Big East play, his leadership also helped, because they, you know, he came back in the Big East tournament game. and I think he has 25-12, and they upset Xavier, and it, you know, just shows how important of a player he is. But also, you know, again, that desire to win, that, you know, to kind of put DePaul back on the map. And even though DePaul probably have not won the Big East tournament, you could still see that, you know, that push from him. And it's, I think that was one of the reasons why, you know, they had an improved start to this season. That's for sure.
Now, during his time there, how have you kind of seen him grow just as a player, whether it be certain aspects of his game or whether it be, you know, something specific like his defense, how that's grown? Where have you seen him grow as a player?
Yeah, I think defensively he's improved a lot. I think it's helped him that he's gotten bigger and stronger and, you know, become a little bit taller as well. But I think defensively, look at him. He was one of the leaders in the Big East in blocks. You look at all the analytical stats. If people look that up, they see he was at the top of the conference in a lot of those areas. And I think, you know, he improved in that spot a lot, really, because there was question marks. Will he be big enough? Will he be strong enough to kind of hold his own against some of the bigger players in the conference, specifically from players like Seton Hall and Xavier, who've got players that can match up with Paul? And, you know, he did really well against a lot of those teams this season because he got stronger and, you know, he became more physical inside the paint. And then, you know, defensively, like you mentioned, he had 8 blocks against Minnesota. He, you know, he was one of the leaders in the conference in overall blocks this season and blocks per game. And if you just look at his rebound totals, you know, he's always hustling to get a defensive rebound and an offensive rebound. So it's all about his desire, his push to get better, because coming out of high school, he wasn't highly recruited, only a 3-star. And it's all about his want to get better and to prove his doubters, to prove everyone, you know, that he can really play and compete at a high level. And I think, you know, this year he really proved it in a conference that was probably one of the, you know, either the first or second best conference in all of America. So, you know, that desire to get better thing really showcased in his junior year.
Yeah, you know, not everyone has that push or that drive on the basketball court or even just that drive to get better. And as we talked about, we've seen him improve in so many areas of his game that obviously, you know, whether it's on the court, off the court, he's putting in the time to get himself better, which is cool to see. And it's really shown off. When you watch him, specifically in the offensive end, are there areas of his game that you find maybe a little bit concerning as he's about to, you know, transition into the NBA?
Yeah, I think the concern about his offensive game is can he shoot from deep? He's got a weird, I mean, if you watch him play, he's got an unorthodox type of release. And I think, you know, he's definitely improved his shot. He became a little bit more consistent this season from outside the paint. But I still think, you know, just reading from scouting reports and from the mock drafts, if the concern that people have is can he be a consistent shooter from beyond 15 feet and can he knock down a couple 3-pointers a game? I think that's the one area where he's still trying to improve and still get better. But I think it's, he'll score enough points, I think, to be able to stay in the league for a long time, because he's going to continue. The ball's going to find him because he plays with so much passion and so much energy that even though he might not be the most reliable shooter from the 3-point line or from the mid range, the ball will eventually find him because he's always looking to get open. He's always looking to get some room to get an offensive board. So I think, you know, if you're a team and you're kind of scared about it, can he be a reliable shooter for a long time, I think you can kind of look at what he does, what else he does on the offensive end, and maybe offset some of those concerns that teams might have about his shooting from the, behind the arc or just from 20 to 25 feet as well.
Yeah, the jump shot definitely wasn't consistent. His form was a little interesting, I guess, if we're going to be nice about it, but it didn't always seem to be the same. So getting to that next level is definitely going to be something that a team's going to want to work on with him. But the nice thing about his game, at least I watch, and maybe you can touch on this, but for a big man at least, pretty solid free throw shooter.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, if you look at DePaul as a whole this past season, not a great free throw shooting team. And, you know, that cost them a lot of games this season early on the Big East schedule, their inability to hit free throws. And Paul, as a forward, he has a really nice touch from the line. And, you know, that really helped, you know, to increase his scoring total. And I think, you know, we see that now in the NBA where a lot of big men are starting to improve their free throw shooting because obviously they might have a better touch from deep. But I think Paul's got a really nice touch from the free throw line compared to a lot of his other DePaul teammates this season where they might have struggled. But yeah, I think that's definitely an area where he's improved a lot, and it really showed this season because he got fouled and he was consistent on hitting both free throws most of the time.
Yeah, that's one thing I always struggle with when you watch big men, not even just in the NBA, but in college. A lot of times they get fouled, and whether you watch a player or not, just in general, when a big man goes to the line, a lot of times you say to yourself, oof, I'm a little worried these are going in. But with him, he's a pretty confident free throw shooter, and you felt like he's going to make most of his free throws, which is something you really need, obviously, going into the next level. But one thing that's interesting to me, he did an interview recently, and he talked about how one of the big focuses has been ball handling and dribbling. Yeah. And when you watched him at DePaul, that was something he definitely looked to do, was to push it in transition. He definitely tried some, at times, some flashier moves when it comes to dribbling. As someone that obviously watched him closely, when he would start doing that kind of thing, were you concerned at all? Because as much as he is pretty good for a big man, being pretty good for a big man as far as dribbling is different than being pretty good, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does. And I think, just watching him, I can't remember what game it was, but this past season, it was to the game during warmups, and he took out a couple of cones, and he was just practicing his dribbling, kind of going in and out while other players were getting their shots up. And he was practicing on his ball handling, kind of making it better prior to a Big East game. And it just shows his want to improve that area where, that might be a concern where maybe it's a little bit loose. It might be a concern for some teams, but I think I can't remember what game it was. It might've been against USC in December, but his passing as well stands out. He had such a good pass to one of his teammates on the break. His ball handling might not be the best, but he does create a lot of plays for other teammates as well, because he gets the rebound and he's always looking to push instead of kind of giving it up to the point guard. And I think there's times this season where maybe he got a little careless with the ball, but overall, I think that really improved this season, and his passing got much better as well, where he had some really nice passes that went for assists earlier this season as well. So I do see him improving his ball handling because, he's, like you mentioned in that interview, he wants to get better in that, because I think you're seeing a lot of big men now, like Jokic and some other players, where they're the de facto point guards of their team. And I'm not saying Paul's going to become that type of player, but I think it's becoming more vital for a big man to have better ball handling skills, because teams are always looking to push. And I think that's one of Paul's better strengths, is to kind of get on the fast break and get easier points in transition.
Yeah. And he's been able to grow, as we touched on, as a player, from year one all the way to year three. And actually, you touched on something interesting. You talked about his passing. So would you say, even just, let's say this, just take this past season, would you say he's really grown as a passer? And that's probably something that is probably going to end up being a pretty good strength of his at the next level.
Yeah, I definitely think, his passing has improved this season. Like I mentioned, he had some really good passes, especially in the non-conference schedule, where it kind of stood out to me, and I think to other people as well. And he's, sometimes he makes not the best passes out of the post, but when he's got the full vision of the court, he's a reliable passer. And I think, that's one, he's really improved in that part of his game as well. I think it's made him more dangerous because, teams are now forced to kind of defend him differently, where before they might have just had to rely on him scoring. Now he's becoming a creator as well for his other teammates. And I do wish we saw that a little bit more this season, where, again, the offense really went through Charlie Moore this past season, where Paul didn't get as many chances to create, or the offense wasn't going through him. And I think if they gave him the ball a bit more on the top of the key, or they allowed him to kind of attack defenders, I think there would have been more opportunities for teammates to get open, and I think he could have found them because of his vision and his ability to spot passes. And I do think DePaul missed that, where they kind of just allowed Charlie to create everything, and Paul kind of had to, the ball kind of had to get to him late in the shot clock, and he didn't have a chance to create as much for his teammates, where he was just looking to get up a shot late in the shot clock. So I do think DePaul could have done that better this season for Paul as well.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I think is going to make him maybe even better, even initially at the next level, is that a team in the NBA is probably going to do a more effective job of really playing to his strengths. Whereas at times at DePaul, I didn't think they did that. And so that's one of those things that I'm looking for as kind of a change as his career continues. Let me ask you this. Is there a moment or a specific game that maybe you put like above all the rest from his career?
I think there's really two that stand out to me. I think maybe I'm missing a couple, but one from his sophomore year when DePaul was in the CBI championship series against South Florida. I think it was game two or game three. Game two, they had to win. It was at home. And I remember Paul like scored, I think it was like 25 or 27 points, and DePaul won the game. I think it was game two. And I remember after that game, during the press conference, I think Coach Lato said, I only called like one play for Paul. And that's when they had still had Max Drews and Eli Kane. The offense was really going through those two players. But Paul still, I think he was one of the leading scorers on the team that night, and they won the game in overtime. And it was, that really stood out to me. And that's when I thought, well, you know, he scored that many points and the offense didn't go through him. And it just shows his ability to just find the ball, to continue to play with energy. And he had a really strong night. I mean, and then I go back to this past season in the Big East tournament against Xavier. He missed the last, I believe, three or four games of the regular season because of an injury. And he comes back and, you know, he wills DePaul to a victory over the 7th seed Xavier. And DePaul is obviously the 10th seed. And he had like 25 and 12. And it's, you know, it was a remarkable performance, because a lot of people didn't know if he was going to come back for that game. And, you know, people at that point already think he's going to leave for the draft after the season and maybe he wasn't going to risk himself. But he came back, he played for the team, and he really willed the team to a victory over a good Xavier team who in the regular season beat them twice and really beat them handily at home earlier in the season when Paul played. And that really stood out to me. It just showed a lot about him that night where, you know, he didn't have to play. He, you know, could have sat out with the injury, healed himself, got ready for the draft. But, you know, he had a really great night against Xavier. And it's unfortunate that he couldn't end off his DePaul career with another game against Villanova or, you know, a run in the NIT tournament or something like that.
Would have loved to watch another game against Villanova. That would have been a lot of fun. And, yeah, I would agree with that Xavier game. A ton of fun to watch, and definitely a moment that stands out. Before I let you go, let me ask you one more thing. What does the future hold for DePaul basketball? Obviously, there's some questions on, you know, what's going to happen with the season just due to the pandemic. But what does DePaul have coming up as far as their roster is concerned? And I guess specifically, I'll ask about Romeo Weems.
Yeah, definitely, Romeo is the next guy from DePaul that's going to go to the NBA. I think. He was really good last season as a freshman, and there's a lot of expectations for him to take another leap this season. But overall, with the roster, you know, they had a lot of people leave. They had, you know, Paul go to the draft, and they had, I think, four or five more transfers leave the program. But they got new players coming in. I think they got five transfers coming in to the program. So I definitely think this team overall might be better than last year's team, just because it has more depth. It has maybe a slight more talent overall, and it's obviously has more experience, like Romeo, some other freshmen, and the new transfers obviously have experience in the college ranks. But I think it's going to be, it's still wait and see with this team. Obviously, you know, DePaul hasn't had a lot of success recently, and there's question marks over, you know, Coach Lato's future, because obviously DePaul is a new athletic director coming in about a month. So I think there's still a lot to see. I think there's potential for them to be good. I don't think they're as good as some of the elite teams in the conference, but they could finish between sixth and eighth. But, you know, they had a good team last season. They obviously had a really good start, and they finished in last. So I think this season is kind of you have to be really patient with them and see what happens, because a lot of people got excited for last year's team and saw how that ended up. So it's just, I think it's, you have to be patient, see how everyone molds together early on in this upcoming season.
Yeah, when it comes to sports, patience is definitely key for most fan bases. Thanks again for joining us. Let me end with this. Where can people find you on social media?
Yeah, on social media, it's Kramer8, so at KREYME8. And then obviously, like you mentioned, I'm the sports editor of the DePaul, so all my articles can be found on our website over there as well.
Perfect. Well, thanks again for joining us, and have a good one.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks again to all our guests. I definitely encourage you to check them out on social media and any other platforms that they are available. As far as we are concerned, if you missed any of our show on Dash Radio's Enough of a Net channel, make sure you check us out in podcast form. We can be found on Spotify, Stitcher, Podient, iTunes, and anywhere else podcasts are found. Again, this has been Robin Hoop bringing rich takes to the poorly informed. And until next week, we'll see you.
With the first pick in the 2003 NBA Draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select LeBron James.
With the 13th pick in the 1996 NBA Draft, the Charlotte Hornets select Kobe Bryant.
With the first pick in the 2015 NBA Draft,
with the third pick in the 2018 NBA Draft,
with the first pick in the 1998 NBA Draft,
the Los Angeles Clippers select the Orlando Magic,
Michael Olcandy.
In the 2019 NBA Draft, the New Orleans Pelicans select Zion Williamson from Duke University.